Welcome to a special edition of the Wednesday night class. It's always significant to talk about the holidays before the holidays, but I think it's much more meaningful when it comes to Sukkot. The reason being is because there's a lot of lessons to be learned from the holiday and on the holiday, but we never get a chance to focus on Sukkot. You know, Pesach, we're focusing already a month before the holiday, and we talk about it, and Haggadah, and even Shavuot, we have 49 days to discuss from Pesach to Shavuot. Rosh Hashanah, we have a month of Elul. Kippur, you have 10 days. Sukkot somehow always gets lost somewhere. In between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, there's no time. You with the lulav and the sukkah and the new suits and the shopping and the cooking. So sometimes we never even get a chance to sit down to understand what exactly should we be thinking on the holiday. So classes like this are always important, but are extra important when we talk about a holiday like Sukkot. There was a rabbi called the Tur, Rabbeinu Yaakov Baal HaTurim. He was a Rishon, and he was the son of a great rabbi called Rabbeinu Asher. We call him the Rosh. And the Tur is famous for his codifying Jewish law. It was his invention of the four sections of Halakha, or the Chayim, Yoredeah, Ibn Aizir, and Hoshin Mishpat. He classified different laws and put them in different books. And he also invented the number system. Siman Aleph, Siman Bet, Siman Gimal. He put each halakha in a separate section, in a separate number, and he classified it, and he codified it. It's an ingenious system. When Nabi Yosef Garo, the author of Shulchan Aruch, came along to write his Shulchan Aruch, he just went along with the system that already was in place by the Tur himself. And he kept the same four-book format, and he kept the same Simanim, and what the Tur talked about in Siman Aleph, Nabi Yosef Garo talked about in Siman Aleph, and Siman Bet the same, and so on and so forth. The Tur writes in the name of his brother, Neri. And he says that the takanot of the holidays, the institution of Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, correspond the avot. Pesach corresponds Avraham Avinu. Shavuot corresponds Yitzhak Avinu. And Sukkot corresponds Yaakov Avinu. How? He goes on to say, Avraham, when he had the guests by his house, tells his wife Sarah, Mahari, Lushi, go knead some dough, Vasi Ugot, and make cakes. And the rabbis tell us, they weren't marble cake, or brownies, or something like that. What type of cakes were they? They were matzot. And the rabbis tell us, it was Pesach. So you see, there's a big connection between Avraham and Pesach. The first man to ever eat officially matzot, on the dates of Pesach was Avraham. We understand. Yitzhak is Shavuot. How is Yitzhak Aminu related to Shavuot? Well, if you remember, the ayu, the ram that was placed on the Mizbeah instead of Yitzhak, those horns from that ram were used at Matan Torah as the shofar that was blown during Har Sinai, during Matan Torah. So the Ayil of Yitzhak was revisited during Matan Torah. So there is a definite connection between Yitzhak and Shavuot. But obviously we came to learn tonight the connection between Yaakov and Sukkot. And this is where it gets a little complicated, because the proof that the Tur brings is, there's a pasuk in the Torah by Yaakov, and the pasuk says, Ve'iben lo bayit, he built for himself a house, un miknehu asa sukkot, and for his flock he made sukkot. There you go, that's Yaakov's connection to sukkot. And we think for a second, what's the connection? Are we just merely connecting words? We see the word sukkah, we see the word sukkot. Here men are sitting in a sukkah, their flock are sitting in a sukkah. Because he erected a sukkah and put some sheep in it, what is that? What does that connect him to the holiday of Sukkot exactly? For sure there were many people living in the Midbar throughout history that erected sukkot. To understand this, we have to really understand one parasha in our Torah, and it's time finally to understand it, because you all know the story, and you read it 100 times, but tonight, we're going to try to give an explanation to one of the most cryptic parashiyot in our whole Torah. A parasha that you might think you understand already. Pasuk says, "Vayivater Yaakov lebedo, vayavek ish emo ad alot hashachar." Pasuk in Sefer Bereshit, Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Chafe. You know the story. Yaakov, it says, remained alone, and a ish, a strong man, who we know was actually the angel of Esav, came to wrestle with him. And he had a bout with the angel of Esav, in actuality, until the morning. And Yaakov overcame the angel, and it was a great victory. And the angel was forced to even bless Yaakov. I mean, you're all familiar with the story? Everybody knows that famous wrestling match between Yaakov and the angel? And you know how he hit him in the leg, and Yaakov walked away limping, and because that we don't eat the sciatic nerve, the gidah nasher. This we know. But let's get some background what went on over here. The Torah says, "Vayivater Yaakov lebedo." Yaakov remained alone. The question is why? Why was he alone? This episode took place after Yaakov left his father-in-law Laban's house. Do you realize that he left Laban's house with his wives, with his children, with his grandchildren, with his wealth? Why was Yaakov alone? Where was his family? Did he lose them on the road? So the Mefashim explained, Yaakov backpedaled and went back because he forgot something. You know, sometimes it happens when you're going on a trip and already you get in the car and everybody's packed and you pull out of the driveway and you get on the Ocean Parkway. I forgot something. And everybody yells at you, well, you forgot it, you're killing the whole trip already, I gotta go back. What is it? What did you forget? So if it's something of importance, you have no choice. A boy says, I forgot my tefillin. Your tefillin, gotta go back. Tefillin's a very important item. But they make a U-turn, they go back. I forgot my sidur. Important. Girl says, I forgot my Tehillim book. Very important. She has to read Tehillim every day. Okay. Go back. Justify. You're sitting in the car, and all of a sudden you're thinking for a second, you say, we gotta go back. What do you gotta go back for? I forgot some paper clips. Paper clips. We're going to make the whole family now. We're going to go back for paper clips. Forget about the paper. What do you need the paper clips for? I don't know, just in case. We have a lot of papers here. We've got to clip them. How are we going to hold the papers together? Paper clips? Okay, move on! Forget about paper clips. So, Yaakov Avinu forgot something. He's now going to make a U-turn, but he's not going to make his whole family go back. He just, let me go back. I'll handle it. What did Yaakov forget is the question. Did he forget a Sefer Torah? Did he forget the Tehillim book? Did he forget some type of religious article? What was the, does anybody know the item that he returned for? Scream it out loud. Okay, you're on tape now, so everybody knows. The answer we heard in the crowd was vessels. And the Torah calls them pachim ketanim, small jugs, usually made out of pottery. Retail value, 22 cents. Bizarre. And you start wondering to yourself, go back to the pachim ketanim. What are you doing, Yaakov Avinu? And the Gemara in Chulin, Sadi Aleph, comes along and learns a very important lesson from Yaakov going back to retrieve his pachim ketanim. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Mikan, from here, Latzadikin, you can learn about the righteous. Shehaviv alehem mamonam yoter megufam. That their money is beloved to them even more than their physical body. They're willing to endure physical hardship to go back, to hassle yourself. For what? For money. That's a great lesson. What in the world is Rabbi Eliezer coming to teach us? We read this statement superficially and we say, we always knew the Shaim loved money. But now you're telling me Sadiqim love their money to the extent they're willing to suffer physically, to endure hardship? What does this mean? This needs explanation. This statement of Rabbi Eliezer is crying out, please explain me. And there are different explanations on this Gemara. One explanation is given from the great rabbi from Kelum, called the Saba from Kelum. And he says like this, his approach is something like, when you're going out to war, the soldier takes with him out to war the bare minimum of necessities that he needs. Why? Because a soldier's constantly running in the fields. He's running from trench to trench, from on the jeep, off the jeep. He cannot be bogged down with a lot of possessions. You know, imagine a soldier running in the field with two big valises. He can't. What do you got in there? Well, I got my stuff in there. Six suits, three pair of shoes. In the war now, bring one shirt, one uniform cluster. You can't go start bogging yourself down with all this stuff. It weighs you down. So the Sadiqim in this world have a mission, they have a goal, they're focused, so they can't get bogged down by materialistic things. Because materialistic things, according to the rabbi, and it's so true, materialistic things, if you really go to the depth of them, every materialistic item is time. What do I mean by that? This table over here. This table over here is time. What do you mean it's time? Well, you had to pay money for this table. It took time to make that money. Somebody had to work to make $20 to go buy this table. So what you're looking at over here is, I don't know, 46 minutes. This watch over here, yeah, somebody had to pay for it. Cost money. It's time. The watch tells time. But it actually is time itself. And everything you have, you always have to define it as, hey listen, I'm living, I'm not going to live forever, and you know, physical things, to amass them and to acquire them, are taking precious time. You know, there's a famous saying, time is money. But they got it wrong. Money is time. That's the Hiddush. So the Sadiqim, the most precious commodity to them is their time. So they are not going to squander their time just to start, you know, collecting. Especially a Sadiq, that all his money that he acquires is done honestly. And this is very important. Because there's a fast way to make a buck, and then there's the old-fashioned way to make a buck, to earn it honestly. You know, you can have a guy in a store where a customer walks in and he sees a live fish, a big fish, and he says, you know, he can milk this guy for a lot. And he starts selling him a lot of things and scheming him and duping him and conning him. And, you know, by the end, the guy has no money left in his pocket and already, you know, he has all his credit cards. That's it. He gave him everything. And you gave him very little for his money. So with one customer, you were able to benefit like it was 1,000 customers. While an honest man takes much longer to make that money. Because when you do things the honest way, it's much more difficult. Guy walks in, you tell him, well, you know, the truth is you're right, the flash on this camera is really not so good. Okay, you lost that guy. Next guy walks in, the truth is it doesn't take really the best pictures, but this is the only one that I have. Oh, thank you, I'll see you. So because you're an honest guy, and because you're fair, and because you're straight, and you give the guy the cash, so as he's walking up, by the way, I just got to tell you that, I can't lie to you, we dropped it 10 minutes ago on the floor. Oh, thanks for telling me. By the way, here, take anything about it. I don't want to broke it. Or you tell the customer, you know, it was refurbished. Oh, really? What does that mean? I don't know what refurbished means. That means already it's been sent back to the factory 6 times for repairs. But it's okay, it's like new. I mean, why was it sent back 6 times? So, another guy would say, refurbished means it's brand new. There's new and there's brand new. The way to say brand new is refurbished. I don't know, the guy's from China, you don't know what refurbished means. For all they could be a Spanish word. So you buy it. So, to make money in a deceitful way is very easy. Quick mark, sketch the guy, take his loose. So the Sadiqeen, their acquisitions usually take more time than others because, like Rabbi Eliezer said, "Nefisha impostinya dehim begizim." Since their hand is not found in stolen things, so everything they acquire is, it's a hardship. But if they have it, they're not willing to give it up so much because they know to replace it is more time. So Yaakov Avinu, he has it already, it's his. He invested the time already, he got it honestly now. Really, the Sabbathim Kelim actually saying when the Gemara says, Havivin Alehen Mamonam, what he really is saying is, Havivim Alehen Zemanam. Their time is precious to them. And since their time is precious to them, therefore they treat their wealth with the utmost maintenance. So God forbid to say it was that Yaakov went over the river to retrieve those pachim kedim. It wasn't an act of weakness. It wasn't an act of a miserly act. It wasn't like some would say he's cheap. In French they say he's a mooch. No, doesn't mean that. It was an act of Yaakov understanding that time was invested and to replace it, fine, I understand his approach. And of course his approach can be analyzed. But tonight I want to offer to you a most wonderful explanation from our master and teacher, the Arizal. Okay, put on your Kabbalah hats, because we're going to go delve into a little mysticism, but it's really not mysticism. It's very understood. That is the Rabbeinu Yitzhak Luri Ashkenazi. And we're going to learn what he held about this story through the eyes of his student, Rav Chaim Vital. We call him the Muharchu, Morenu out of Chaim Vital. And I quote exactly his words and he says, V'hineh, Habib Adehem Mamonam, the reason why their money is so beloved to them, ki lehiyot shenishpa milemala, because their money was given to them from heaven. Eno ra'uy shiyema espo. It's not befitting to despise a gift that you got from heaven. Ki im eno tzorech lo, listen to these words, because if he did not need this materialism, Lo haya nitan lo oto davar mehakadosh baruch hu. Amazing. If he did not need this item, God would not have given it to him. The Sadiqim understand that everything they earn honestly is given to them from God directly as a gift, and they need it for their mission, whatever that mission may be. There's no such thing as excess. There's no such thing as extra. Everything is tailor-made. Everything is measured. And if the Sadiq gets from the biggest acquisition to the smallest acquisition, he understands, this was given to me from Borei Olam, not from my own work, not from my diligence, not from my... It's God's gift. It's not befitting to disgrace God's gift by just letting it waste somewhere. So he says, "Lachen hazar al pachim ketanim." That's why he went back. Ki im lo ayachozer, because what does it show? What does it signify if Yaakov says, "Piss, move on"? What does it signify?
It doesn't care much.
Very good. Ki im lo ayachozer, you saw this, Ariza. Ki im lo haya chozer, haya nir'eh, it would seem, ke'ilu eno rotze otam. As if he doesn't want it. V'chol davar nishba melemar, anything that you got from heaven, sarik lehader alav. You have to respect it and go after it. So when the Arizal looks at the statement, habivin alehen mamonam, what he's really saying is, Havivin Alehen Boran. Their Creator is beloved to them. And since their Creator is beloved, and the Creator gave them gifts of physical things, so it's disrespectful to the Creator to abandon property. This was given as a gift to you. Doesn't matter how much it's worth. If it's a gift from God, you have to respect it. Not respecting the gift is not respecting God. So Havivin Alehin Mamonan is Havivin Alehin HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not the gift, the giver of the gift. Allow me to give you an example to bring this point home. Imagine there was a poor man, destitute, religious man, devoutly religious. And he realizes that there's a mitzvah to make Netilat Yadayim every morning, but he doesn't even have an Netilat Yadayim cup. He's that poor. And he's sitting on his bed before he goes to sleep, and he turns to God and says, "God, I don't even have a Netilat Yadayim cup. I want to serve you. I want to do the mitzvot, but I don't even have a vessel." And he goes to sleep crying. The next morning he wakes up. Next to his bed, there's a plastic Netilat Yadayim cup with a note. "Here's the Netilat Yadayim cup you requested. Love, God." She be checking. The guy can't believe it. It goes out of his mind. Value of the cup? 35 cents. But the value of the cup is priceless. This is like God. I went to sleep, I didn't have a cup. I woke up, known from God, the cup is next to my... Can't believe it. He goes, he makes it to that Jedi, and he kisses the cup, he puts it in a vault, he locks it up. That's his most precious thing in the world. A couple of years later, that fellow becomes a very wealthy man. Tremendously rich. Now he has to upscale himself. He moves from his little apartment. He's going to move to the country. He's going to move to a big estate, to a big property, and he calls the movers. Says, "Okay, bring all my junk, so to speak, bring it to the new house." And they come, they load up all the stuff, and they go. He already drives the day before. He's sitting in his new house, and now he's looking frantically. "Well, where's the cup? Where's the cup?" He tells the movers, he says, "Where's the cup? What cup? There was a plastic cup next to my bed." "Oh yeah, we saw it. We left it junk. Wait. A man like you, look at this, look at that over here. You're going to tell me you're really worried about a cup?" The guy gets in his car, he drives 50 miles back to the apartment, scouring the apartment, lying on the floor under the bed. "I got it." The movers are looking at the guy, "What is your problem? What happened to you? A cup? You went back, you're making a big deal. He said, you don't understand, this cup over here was given to me from God. Oh, that's a different story. It's a different story. That's the way Yaakov Avinu looks at every single one of his acquisitions. Everything that he had, every dollar in his pocket, to him, he perceives it as God came down and left the dollar next to his bed with a note, this is from God. So therefore, for him to abandon his property, it's like the guy, I get God, thank you, I don't need it anymore, I'll see you later. Now I'm living here, I don't need you to touch a dime cup. Thanks a lot for nothing. So it would be disrespectful. So that's a great understanding of that. He's a phenomenal explanation. Yaakov going back. This must be explained. I mean, Bezat Hashem, when you get to this parasha and you read this Chazal, always remember the way Arizal explained it. This is must be explained like this. We continue. Now again, we're building. That's the way the shiur is working here. We're building here. You ready for? You ready to go to the next step now? Everybody understood what we said so far? Isaac, I would love to answer your question. I'm going to answer it. But give me a second just to keep on developing. After the class, we'll answer all questions. Step two. Are you familiar with a famous conversation that took place between Yaakov and Esav when they were still in the womb? Now, I can't really explain to you how that takes place. How does it happen in the womb, in the mother's stomach? You know, two brothers can have a conversation. I don't know how that works exactly, but the Tana de Belial says it took place, and he even gives you the words what they said to each other. And the conversation went like this, and I quote, it's in Tana de Belial, Perek Yutet. And it says, Amru Rabotenu Be'od Kishayu Yaakov Be'esav B'me'ai Iman, when they were still in their mother's womb, Amar Yaakov Le'esav, Yaakov tells Esav, Esav Ahi, Esav my brother, Shine Ahi Manachm, we're two brothers, Le'avinu to our father, Ushne Olamot Yesh Lefanenu, there's two worlds in front of us. What are the two worlds? Olam Hazeh, Olam Abba. Ha'olam Hazeh, let me tell you about the two worlds. Olam Hazeh Yesh Bo Achila, there's Ekal in this world, Ushtiyah, there's drink, there's shrab in this world. Umasa umatan, there's business, there's flus. Velaset isha, you get to marry a girl. Ululid banim ubanot, you have children. Nabe, Olam Hazeh sounds enjoyable. What about Olam Abba? About Olam Abba, enochen bechol amidot alalu. It doesn't have any of these things over here. There's no money. There's no eating, there's no drinking, there's no marrying, there's no children. I'm giving you a deal now, I'm giving you a chance. He wants to make a deal with him. He says, I take Olam Abba, you take Olam Hazeh. Hey, Saab thinks for a second, this is a no-brainer. You tell me Olam Hazeh has all these beautiful things. Olam Abba, you know, esoteric, it's metaphysical something, he doesn't understand it, and it's in the future. Esav is not interested in investing in futures. Esav is investing, he's a day trader. Esav wants what I can get today now. Olam Hazeh, when is that option, when can I exercise my option? Today. Give me that. Olam Abba, you gotta wait, 120 years, I'm not interested. So at that moment, one of the greatest deals in history was cut between Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov takes Olam Abba, Esav takes Olam Hazeh. It should be pointed out that this discussion is actually hinted in our Torah. Could you believe that? This is discussed in our Torah. Give me a tissue. This is discussed in our Torah. Where is it discussed in our Torah? You remember the story when Yaakov Avinu was making the Adesu, and Esav comes back from the field, and Esav is very hungry. And what does Yaakov tell Esav? Mechra kayom et bechorat techali. What is he telling him? Sell me today your birthright. But he doesn't tell him, sell me today. Because how would you say that in Hebrew? Mechra. Thank you. How would you say that in Hebrew? Mechra hayom. Sell me today. What does he tell him? Mechra kayom. Sell me like today. What does that mean? Sell me like today. You know what he was telling him? Sell me your birthright like today you did it in the womb. Meaning we went through this already. You remember we talked about this whole discussion? Sell me, give me the papers now so I can just sign. Let's consummate the deal. It's like a guy that was in negotiations to buy a big piece of real estate. Back and forth meetings, lawyers, questions, answers, negotiating, give and take. After 2 weeks of negotiating, they finally sit down, meeting, the lawyer presents papers to everybody, they take out their pen, everybody signs their name. Somebody sitting in the meeting says, wow, that was the quickest deal I ever saw. Quickest deal. You know what we did to get to this stage over here? There was meetings, negotiating. This is the end of the deal. So Yaakov Avinu, already the deal was made in the womb. Here Yaakov Avinu is saying, let's hand over the papers now today. Let's make it official. Mechra kayom et bechorat echem. Sell me like today. Meaning, let's go back to that deal. Thank you, honey. And let's renegotiate it and let's just sign the papers. Esav is more than happy. Esav throws the bechora. At that day, it was established. Yaakov, where is his clause? Olam Abba. Where's Esav? Olam Hazeh. Now here's where it gets exciting. The confrontation between Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov has now been away for many years. Esav hasn't seen him, so Esav really doesn't know what's doing with his brother. Esav can dream that, well, listen, Olam Hazeh is mine. We established that already. So if you would ask Esav, you know, what are you expecting to see from your brother Yaakov? A scrawny little man, famished, with torn clothes, because that's all Olam Hazeh. He has no Olam Hazeh. Olam Hazeh is mine. That's how he's, you know, viewing it. And how do you see Esav? Wives, children, money, animals. Olam Hazeh. Fair, he deserves it. That was the contract. Comes the 10th of Eliyahu and continues and says, Be'ota sha'a natal Esav b'halko olam hazeh v'yakov natal halko b'olam haba. Uksheba Yaakov mi'bet Lavan. When Yaakov came from Lavan's house, Vera'a Esav. And what does Esav see? Sheyesh le'Yaakov nashim banim abadim shefachot behemot kesef ezahav. Way out of his mind. He has wives, four wives, children, money, gold, silver, slaves, maids. He can't believe it. Amar Esav li Yaakov, Yaakov, ahi Yaakov, my brother, lo kach amar tali, didn't we make a deal? Shetitol ata ha'olam haba, v'ani etol ha'olam hazeh. He's screaming bloody murder, breaching contract. You didn't keep your end of the deal. You said you're going to take olam haba. What is this here? What is all this wealth? What is all this enjoying? And he can't control himself. He says it again. U'minayin lecha kol ha'olam hazeh. Where'd you get all this stuff from? Nashim, banim, amon, avadim, shefachot. Lama ata mishtamesh v'nehene min ha'devarim sheba olam hazeh kemoti. Why do you have the same things I have? What then did we discuss? What was the whole purpose of our deal if you have the same things that I have? Now the answer is very important, because the answer is going to teach us how we have to deal with physical and materialism. Which means now we're getting to the answer. Now we're getting to the highlight. The question of Esav is a good question. I thought we made a deal. You get Olam Haba. How then are you walking around with a lot of Olam Hazeh around you? Whatever Yaakov answers, that's going to be the answer for us also. Yaakov now is making the rules. A Jew is only allowed to be involved in materialism and physical if... And that's the big if now. What was the answer? And he says, Ve'amar lo Yaakov le'esav, and Yaakov tells Esav, Ze me'at ha'rechush shenatan li ha'kadosh baruch hu. First of all, this is all from God. That's the way Yaakov looks at his wealth. But for what purpose? Lehishtamesh bo lefi hatzorech sheli ba'olam hazeh. All this wealth that I have is necessary for me to fulfill my mission in this world to get to Olam Haba. Which means Yaakov Avinu is now explaining to Esav the basic difference between the Jewish attitude towards monetary and the Goyim's attitude. A Jew's attitude is money and wealth and physical things are not a means in themselves. They are a means to get you to another place, to Olam Haba. We cannot deny, to live in this world you need physical things. You need a house, you need a car, you need to eat, you need some money in your pocket. Nobody denies that. Yaakov did not say that, you're right, I'm going to burn all my children and all my wealth, because I need this. Everybody in life needs physical. The question is, for what? Yaakov is teaching us. A Jew uses the materialism that he has as a means to get to Olam Haba. The greatness of Yaakov is, and this is the $99,000 question, he was able to really explain that everything he had and everything, nothing was extra. I don't know how that works out. How could you go through all your possessions and say, I need this for Hashem, this for Hashem, and that for Hashem, this for Olam Haba? It's such a calculated effort that has to be made, but Yaakov was able to make that effort. For tonight's class, in truth, there should be a follow-up. Tonight, I'm trying to lay down the philosophy. How to actually put this philosophy into play is another question. How much, how little, what's considered justified? Those are all good questions, and there should be strong answers to this. Tonight, I think it's alone and enough just to drop the bombshell that Yaakov's answer is, all my wealth is for Tzorech Olam Haba. That's a new way of looking at monetary things. It's a new way of looking at wealth. While Esav is different. By him getting Olam Hazeh, you know what he's allowed to do? You know what Esav's allowed to do by getting that contract? He's allowed to go shopping for things that he doesn't need. He's allowed to just consume. He can buy. He's allowed to take things for the sake of things. He can eat because I want to eat. Because I love food. No other purpose. I'm eating so I can have strength to eat some more. No problem. I'm sleeping so I can have strength to go back to sleep again. Sleep for sleep's sake, eat for eat's sake. Everything for the sake of the physical pleasure itself. Yaakov does that, throw him in jail. You're a thief. You have no right to do that. You signed the contract. Esav does that. You're an honest man, you're a fair man, you're keeping your deal. Good for you, Hazak Baruch, keep it up. That's a very big hashkafah between Jew's attitude and Goy attitude. Now, once already we got to this point, we understand the connection that while Yaakov goes over the river to retrieve those pachim kitanim, v'yivater Yaakov lebado, he remains alone. Who greets him at that moment? The angel of Esav. Why then? Why then did the angel of Esau? That was his cue. He walked in at that moment. Why at that moment? What spurred him up? What woke him up? You know what woke him up? Because, like Esav, the angel of Esav also knows the contract that was signed by Yaakov. And any time there's a slight chance that Yaakov is getting too close to physical possessions for the wrong motive, Esav's going to pull out the contract and remind him, hey, can't do that. So when Yaakov goes over a river for the sole purpose to retrieve Pachim Ketanim, the signal that he's sending off is physical, running after the money. So the angel of Esav goes, oh, what are you doing? What happened over here? We can do that. You can't do that. So Yaakov in the wrestling match is really proving to the angel of Esav, no, I need these pachim for my avodat Hashem. I need this item to get to Olam Haba. And the angel, being honest, of course, is forced to say, 100%, I agree. But have to be proven with him, which means the angel is like a policeman arresting you, under arrest. No, police officer, let me explain myself. Yeah, okay, good explanation. You can go now. That's what this whole fight was. The Pachim Ketanim instigated the fight. The angel comes and says, what are you doing running after the money like that? Isn't it that comes? God sent me from heaven. I'm going to leave them. I said, Hanan li Elohim bazeh. I need these. Oh, very good. It should be pointed out the words that the Torah uses when Yaakov talks about his wealth and when Esav talks about his wealth. When Yaakov talks about his wealth, Yaakov says, V'chi yesh li kol. In regard to my wealth, Yaakov says, I have everything. I have everything I need. When Esav is talking about his wealth, what does he say? Yesh li rav. I have a lot. And that's the basic difference. A Jew always is supposed to have everything. I have everything, Baruch Hashem. Everything I need. A goy, since there's no limit, yesh, I always have a lot, but I never have everything. Because a goy is constantly amassing and amassing and amassing, and the goal is, you know, the one with the most money at the end of the game wins. And go on the street and ask most people, and unfortunately Jews also, what's the goal in life? Well, one out of a million will say to finish Shas. But leave that guy. The guy's crazy. Let's talk about the normal guys. The normal guys will answer you. What's the goal in life? To make as much money as you can. Yeah. And then I'll laugh at you and say, what a silly question that was. You know, kind of like, you can stop a guy and go, what's 1 + 1? Of course, money is what you came to this world for. And those that acquired a lot of money deserve all the respect in the world. Because they reach, and then you'll have some guys that they want to say money, but they feel guilty, you know, showing their base desire and animalistic, you know, love for the physical. So they throw in some nice words with it. Money, peace and happiness. Leave the peace. What you're really saying is money, money, and money. It's just, the peace and the happiness is just to justify your hand after the money. But that's fine for Esav. It's fine, Esav. No problem. But it's when Yaakov talks like that, we have a problem. Now, the angel in that story was somewhat successful, unfortunately, because he was able to paralyze the leg of Yaakov somewhat. He gave him a blow to the leg. And Yaakov walks away limping. The angel of Esav wasn't able to affect Yaakov with this desire to be drawn after physical olam hazeh. Yaakov was immune, but he was able to affect the children of Esav. the children of Yaakov, I should say. Yaakov's leg represents his children. We're the children of Yaakov, and we see that the angel was successful, but we're tested on a daily basis in our encounters with how much to take from this world. You know, especially in America, we give great respect to the consumer. Consumer has a tremendous power we give him in this room. It's called buying power. It's a big liberty that we have. Freedom to buy anything you want, anytime you want, as much as you want. And we're taught constantly, opening newspapers, one day sale, 2 day sale, come buy, come spend. It's not a day that goes where we don't get a stack of catalogs selling you all different type of things. And the attitude of Esav is, yeah, what's it called? Oh, read the catalog. But I don't need these items. So what? Do you need the item to go read through the catalog? You don't need to have the item, but you just go through the catalog. This is a nice thing. And of course it goes 1-800 something. Give me the credit card. What are you getting? I don't know. I'm getting an item. Why? I don't know. It's nice. Shop. Esav can shop like that. He doesn't have to justify why he's buying things. But a Jew, what are you buying? You know, girls will come along and say, yes, where are you going to shopping? For what? I don't know. You don't know. We'll see. We'll see what we need. We'll see what we need. You don't know what you need before you go. You need butter, you need milk, you need juice. You know, in the olden days, to show you how much we're affected by this hashkafa in America. Years ago on a Sunday afternoon, what did kids do? Kids would get together, they'd get a spool, go and have a football game, do a hand touch. They'd maybe play some baseball in the spring. That was what kids are supposed to do. Go to a 10-year-old kid, 11-year-old kid, to, what are you doing Sunday? I'm going to the mall. To the mall? What's in the mall for a 10-year-old kid? That became already a sport in America. It's a sport of shopping. Sport of consuming. Buying. Purchasing. For what? Take it, I don't know. Everybody walks out of the mall with bags, with gleaming from ear to ear. They opened up a mall on the West Coast. They called it the Western Mall. They said how thousands of people come every day to worship at the Western Mall. Worshipping the materialism. Worshipping Olam Hazeh. Give me. Throwing, putting things, give me. Ripping things off the shelf. Throwing it in the bag. Credit cards going through the machines. Purchasing! And you go to everybody's house, and everybody has that closet. What's in that closet? Stuff. All stuff that you just acquired from all the years. Stuff that's happening there. You're collecting all things everywhere. It's a pass out. You throw out some old stuff and you can't throw out everything. You keep it in there. And that's what we're doing. We're just buying. Buying to buy. That is Esav's way. The Jewish way is, of course you have to have things. Of course you have to buy things. But it's not just untamed. It's just not unleashed. It's just not go wild. But that's the way we're brought up. We hear game shows where they're giving away all sorts of gifts and things like that. Guy gets the answer right. Oh, you got 350 days in a Y. You live there for the rest of your life. Wow, phenomenal. We're being, you know, that's the way they're enticing us. Lotteries and everything is to draw you into the physical. We become so crazed with money that we're not even willing to buy a lottery ticket unless it's Powerball. It's 352 million, they'll buy it, and then it becomes worth it. That's how crazy we get. That's a $6 million. I don't know, it's not $6 million. Got split it two ways. That's not worth the buck. That's how crazy. Which means right, 300. That's the numbers we're looking at. Yeah, 350 million. I buy a ticket for that. Yeah, that's something. That's something substantial, right? Look how wild we are. You know, you offer the guy half a glass of oranges. No, no, no. I need 63 acres of oranges. Give me half a glass of oranges. You want the half a glass? Take no, no. We became so blinded. But that's Esav. That's Esav. Everybody's standing online when they're interviewing the guy. What are you going to do if you win 350 million? They're all fantasizing. They're all talking. Oh, I'm going to do this, do that. Our way is whatever you have. You earned it honestly. It's from God. It's a gift from Hashem. Use it now. What you're supposed to be using it for, Torah, for Mitzvah. And that's the real way you can test yourself. If you want to test yourselves, look at the way you spend money when it comes to religion. You go to a store to buy a mezuzah, and the sofer tells you, there's an $18, there's a 26, there's a 56, there's a 106. Different levels. And what do you tell the sofer? Is there a $10? Is there a $10? So what does that show you when you ask that question? That shows you, you're going to have to put a mezuzah because you're guilty conscious, but you don't want to squander money on a mezuzah. Because you could do a lot, you could buy spaghetti, you can go to a fancy Italian restaurant and spend $101 on a spaghetti. I'd rather squander it on a spaghetti with marinara than a mezuzah. Because what to us? That physical is the main thing. That's Esav. Esav doesn't want a mezuzah. I'm going to buy it because I'm Jewish and that's what we have to do. But the attitude is supposed to be, of course, give me the best. Because if you understand what the money was given to you for, the money is given to you to get Olam Haba. Therefore, when you have an opportunity to buy mitzvot, here's the litmus test. Here's the test to see if you know your priority. And the guy goes home with a $10 mezuzah, but with a $200 doorknob. Doorknob's the most important item. Use it every second. You're opening, closing. You gotta have a good doorknob. So that's the problem. The guy is focusing on the doorknob, but on the mezuzah he doesn't. So the guy's priorities are all messed up. And the guy spends, you know, $10,000 on flowers for the bar mitzvah, and he's arguing with the sofer that it's highway robbery, $300 for a pair of tefillin. What are you making the bar mitzvah for? The florist or for the tefillin? What happened to you? So we got a lot of Esav influence. And if you look at the story goes on. If the Yaakov finishes with Esav and explains to him all the money I have is for my Olam Haba, it's needed, it's justified. He goes from that and it says he builds for himself a house by Ibn Lobayit. Ul-Mikneu Asa Sukkot. And for his flock, he made Sukkot. Here's the highlight. Here it is. He made Sukkot for his sheep. And he called the place Sukkot. What is the Torah coming to teach us here? So that's coming to say, Vayibin lo bayit. He built himself a house. You know what the Targum explains? House? Not a regular house. Bet Midrash. Yaakov erects a yeshiva. A bayit. And his flock, his money, his materialism, where did he put it? He put them in the sukkah. You know what a sukkah represents? Temporary. A house is permanent. A sukkah is temporary. Yaakov is trying to teach us all a lesson. Look what I built my house, and look where I put my wealth. The house is Torah, Bet Midrash, the yeshiva. That's the main item. That's going to be forever. You know where the money is? He didn't burn his money. You need money. He didn't abandon his money. But he's giving you the proper attitude. The money is in the sukkah. Sukkah is temporary. The money is only temporary to get you to the house. The money is used to get you to Olam Haba. And that's exactly what the holiday of Sukkot is supposed to teach us. After we've reached this understanding of the story of Yaakov, we can now understand the connection between Yaakov and the holiday of Sukkot. When you go sit in the sukkah and you're sitting in flimsy walls with raindrops dripping from the roof, with a wind gusting underneath the walls, and you say to yourself, this is a temporary abode, I could be sitting in the house with heating, with a roof, comfortability. But you know what the Torah is trying to teach you by Sukkot? Remember what Yaakov did with his sukkah. He put his wealth in the sukkah. This life is only transient. It's only temporary. This is not your main structure. Your main structure is Olam Haba. Don't get sucked into Olam Hazeh. Don't get sucked into Esav's way. Because when you get addicted to this world, it never ends. You have 100, you want 200. You have 200, you want 400. It never ends. It's like drinking salt water. You just get thirsty and thirstier. And you start drowning in it. And you can't get out. Sukkot is a time to remember what the priorities are. The doorknob is the mustard. The sandwich is the mezuzah. But when you treat the mezuzah like the mustard, and the doorknob like the sandwich, then you have a problem. Sukkah is to remind you. Rabotai, Yaakov put his wealth in the sukkah. It's temporary. The wealth is temporary just to get you somewhere. It's not for itself. You have to use the beracha. You have a car. You use it to go to shul. You use it to go to work. You use it to do mitzvot. You have a house. You use it to raise your family. Shemirat Shabbat. To have classes. And so on and so forth. You try to use the blessings that God gave us to use it as the equipment to gain more Olam Haba. And that's a strong lesson of Sukkot. It's a very powerful lesson. When you're sitting in the Sukkot, that's therapy. When everybody else is complaining, oh, let's go inside, you're sitting in the Sukkot and say, hold on, I'm learning something here. It's very important. I gotta get this in my blood. This, my bones have to feel. This world is temporary. Life is a Sukkot. Where's the house? Olam Haba. Don't get sketched. Don't believe that this world is the main house, because then you're going to mess up. And you're a thief, because you have no right to take from this world. That's Esav's world. And whenever you take from this world, Esav's going to come after you. Esav's going to come and tell you, no matter what generation it is, even our generation. When we see anti-Semitism and Gwim coming against Jews, but the Gwim are trying to remind us, is, hey, you made a deal. You're not religious. You have no right to start playing with all those toys there. You have no right to start using all that physical for the sake of physical. That wakes up the green, like it woke up the angel of Esav. In conclusion, I'm going to tell you that the work of Sukkot, of course, is on the holiday itself. But the work of Sukkot actually begins the day after Sukkot. Because Sukkot's only 7 days. So you built yourself, you got the hashkafah, life is temporary, this world is temporary, the money of Yaakov, it's only used temporarily to get... Right, now what? 7 days later, you go back into your house. The goal of Sukkot is to teach you how to live in your house with the attitude of Sukkah. That's the hard job. It's easy to sit in the sukkah and that world is transient, world is temporary. That's easy. The goal is to live in your regular house with the same attitude and not to forget. And that's the connection that the Tur said in the name of his brother, the Ri, between Yaakov Abinu and the holiday of Sukkot. To school the Shanim Rabot, יעימות וטובות. רבי חנניה בן עקשיא אומר, עשה הקדוש ברוך הוא לזכות ישראל, לפיכך הרבה להם תורה הזאת שנאמר, אדוני חפש למען צדקו, יגדיל תורה ויאדיר. אמן. אמן. אמן.